Good evening, everyone. I'm Sandy, and I'm not the host. I'm so nervous. I'm not going to talk a whole lot about years ago. I'm just going to talk about the last 8 years of my life that have been really crazy, really dishonest, deceiving. I didn't, you know, I was very strong in this program, and I didn't want to give all that up, so I remained unsober and lied to everybody for the last 8 years. A lot of my friends, you know, I don't know if they knew that I wasn't really here but not here, but they stuck by me. They just kept sticking by me. Not everybody. A lot of people walked away from me. But there's a few stuck by me. I think I got really old, coming in and out. At the time I was married, and I really loved them, and I told them I would do anything to not leave me, but stop drinking. And, you know, thank God he left me, because I did everything I could possible to drive him away. And I thought that was the marriage I would spend the rest of my life with. And I totally destroyed it from my drinking. My two sons hung in there with me for a long time, and they saw my disease take a turn that they had never seen. You know, they both grew up in AA, and they got to the end where I was partying with both of them. And I never, ever thought that that would be something I would do. The last 8 years, I can't tell you how many times I was in and out of the hospital with IVs and fluids pumped into me because I was so sick. And I'd go through one or two days of detoxing, and I'd end up in the hospital. And it happened numerous times. At one point, I had twice, actually, my son in the car, and we're spinning in circles on 198. And I'm, you know, thank God no cars were coming. However, I convinced them that somebody had drove me off the side of the road, but there was no cars. And, you know, I just thank God every day I didn't kill my son or hurt him or anything like that. It got to where my oldest was disgusted just to see me walk up to his house. My grandkids no longer told me I was the best. They always tell me, Grandma Sandy, you're the best. Well, they quit saying that. In fact, that was one of the first things I noticed. They didn't really interact with me anymore. It was like they knew something was wrong with me. And I try and go over there sober, and I was unwilling. I would take a Pepsi cup and a colored straw and my glass full of alcohol. And I would stay, you know, distance from everybody so they wouldn't know I was drinking. And, you know, and then I would spend, you know, every time I drank, I'd spend at least a day or two just really, really sick. I wish I could say that my boys and the marriage and all that stuff was enough to want to get me sober. The hospital visits, the getting pulled over by the sheriff, the getting followed home from the bars all the way to Exeter, from the Green Olive all the way to Exeter, I'd be followed. you know, one cop stopped me and did a sobriety check on me and whatever, and I just happened to have my ID, and I had a job where my ID meant something, I guess, but he saw my ID and he said, I'm following you home, and if I see you on the road again, I'm going to take you to jail. And so I waited 2 hours, and I was out and running, and I had to move from Ivanhoe. I didn't want him, because he was, like, bugging me. He was interfering in my drinking. The thing that got me back in the program was I was suicidal. I was so lonely that, I mean, I just had this hole in the pit of my gut that just would not go away. And I quit coming around for the last 2 years because I couldn't get sober. And I couldn't hide it anymore. I don't know if I was, but I was trying. And so I spent a lot of time in my bedroom, staring at the wall, wondering how I was going to get more and more and more and more. That's all I thought about. And one day in the garage with my boys, you know, it was just one other day, I was just going over there to, you know, whatever. And they just told me, Mom, you look like you're dying. And they both started crying and they put their arms around me. And I started crying and I didn't think, you know, I thought, great, I'm going to have to do something. And I, you know. Thanks. I should have never raised them in AA, you know. But, you know, I promised them I'd go into a recovery home. I called them and they put me in some outpatient program or whatever. Well, you know, I just thought I'll just wait for a bed because I'm special. I don't need to go outpatient. I got some partying to do before I have to go in. So that lasted like a couple of weeks, and I really at that point wanted to die. And so I called the counselor I was supposed to be going into, his group, and I called him and I said, hey, if I don't get into a bed, I don't think I'm going to make it much longer. And he called me back that night and told me there was a bed open. And I went in and I surrendered. And at the beginning, I went in to get everybody off my back. My sister was really angry with me. She was calling me every day. I hated my phone. Every time it rang, I was like, ah, I know it's her. You know, wondering if I'm dead or alive. Because like a week prior to that, I got pneumonia. I had pneumonia like 2 or 3 times that year also. And I met her at Walgreens because I had better things to spend my money on than medication, and she paid for all my medication for pneumonia. And when I walked in, my eyes were just like swollen shut. I was so sick. I couldn't breathe, and she just started crying. You know, 2 minutes. I'm looking at this watch. It's been, what I realized since I've been here this time is you guys cannot keep me sober. You make it way easier for me, but you cannot keep me sober. And I know this because there's been times in the last 6 months that I've thought about drinking and nobody mattered. And I just had to pray about it. And I prayed and I prayed and I prayed. Sometimes it lasts a day or two. And then it goes away for a long time. And then it overwhelmingly comes up again. I read my big book all the time. My favorite chapter is the family afterward. I love that chapter. I've been making amends to people in the program that I ran over for so many years. And most of all, my family. And thank you very much.
our main speaker. Can we give a great Tulare County welcome for Suzanne?
Thank you, Tulare County. Rick, is this meeting till 9:30? 9:30?
Yes.
Okay. 10:30, yeah. Well, my name's Suzanne, and I'm an alcoholic. Hi, all, and this is a hell of a place to be on a Friday night. For those of us that are alcoholics, I don't know about you guys. Most of you, I've heard you talk about your drinking, so I know Friday nights are a great drinking night, no matter where we live. Happy birthday to Alcoholics Anonymous, 76. There's a celebration going on tonight, and I was torn, like, gosh, too bad we couldn't be there because we were there last year, but last year was 75 years, so it was kind of a big deal. My sobriety date is July 6, 1991, so pretty soon it's coming up. It's going to be 20 years, and that's a miracle for somebody like me who could not think what it would be like to not have a drink. Part of what kept me from thinking that I was an alcoholic is I never drink every day. And when I heard people in AA talk about their drinking, of course I heard about all the differences. I never drank every day. I still had a job. And I still had a car, even though it didn't have a driver's side door on it. And there were some other complications, but everything else on the outside looked okay. I did not think that it was possible at my age to be an alcoholic. My alcoholic drinking was from 21 to 31. And I will have to tell you a little bit of what it was like before I started drinking so you can get an idea of what was going on in my life to stage the perfect mindset for alcoholism. I'm not one of those that comes from a really awful family. A lot of people in AA will talk about their alcoholic parents. My parents are not alcoholic. I am the fifth child of eight. I have four brothers and three sisters, so it's nice and even, four boys and four girls. I was sent to a parochial school from first to eighth grade. I'm a straight A student. I never got in any trouble. I went to an all-girls Catholic high school, and you know, I heard people talking in these rooms about us feeling different, and I did feel different, although I seemed to blend. But when I was 14, with my mom having eight kids, she wasn't able to really pay attention to what was going on. It's not possible. And one of my brothers brought over a friend. And, you know, all that friend had to say to me was, oh, you got a cute butt. And that was it. I was in love with him. I thought he was the best thing ever. And he was 19. So those of us that have kids, 14-year-old, 19-year-old, that doesn't work. Well, I didn't tell my parents. And what ended up happening for the next 2 years was I lied to my parents about everywhere I went, anything I did, and who I was with. I was with him. And, you know, it didn't matter to me that he was a convicted felon. It didn't matter to me that, you know, he had a warrant out for his arrest. There was all sorts of signs, but, you know, at 14, I didn't have a clue. So, you know, I was teaching religion on Saturdays, and I had a commitment there, and, you know, my parents are seeing me do all the things they think I'm supposed to be doing, and he convinced me to run away from home with him. And so we had $500. I stole my mother's engagement ring, and we got on a Greyhound bus to Utah. That was the only bus that was going out of state somewhere, so we picked Utah. Why Utah? I don't know. It's a very strict Mormon state. It did not, it wasn't the best place for us to go. But anyway, I was married to this man for 5 years. I had 2 kids by the time I was 19. And, you know, I've heard, even my husband has talked about the relationships where he took hostages. This man literally took me hostage. We lived in Utah. I had nobody around. We had no phone. And as it turned out, he became one of the 10 most wanted men in the state of Utah. And, you know, here I am, just a baby myself, 19, 2 kids. On my 20th birthday, you know, my shape had changed drastically from the time I was 16 and ran away from home and having 2 kids that were, you know, barely a year apart. He took me shopping for my birthday, clothes shopping. And this is just the kind of life we had. We went into the store. He said, you know, go get some stuff. I tried it on. I came out. And he said, okay. He whipped out his gun and he said, you ladies, on the floor. He looked at me and he goes, you go to the car, take the stuff. I go, ah! So I had a crazy life. It was just 5 years. But during those 5 years, I was desperate for something to take away the pain. I recall one time where he let me go out. I had made a friend. It was a neighbor. And in Utah, you can't just go to a bar, you can't just go to, there's state liquor stores, but she belonged to a private club. And so we went drinking, and I was only allowed to be out until 10 o'clock. Okay, and he's home with the 2 little kids. And I started drinking. And before I knew it, it was like 1:30 in the morning. And I didn't remember anything that had happened. And it turned out to be a really awful night that night when I got home. But I just remember thinking, oh, I want to feel that way again. And the only time before that I remember an episode with alcohol was when my sister got married at when I was 15. And I had some champagne, just a glass or two, and the next thing I knew, I'm passed out on the table. I don't remember how much I drank or how that happened to me. I've heard about a lot of people that talk about their progression of alcoholism, and mine did get worse, but my very early memories of drinking, that is exactly what happened to me every single time. Once I had one drink, I couldn't stop, and I almost always had a blackout. I never remembered what happened. Needless to say, those 5 years created a lot of wreckage in my life. Since he was wanted, somehow I was able to escape. His brother came and got me, and I ended up having to move back home with my parents. I have 2 little kids. I didn't graduate from high school. I have no education, and I am just a mess. During that period of time, I had when I had those kids, I did not even use my right name. When I ran away from home, I changed my name. I was Lisa Sudlinger, by the way. Hey, you ever read about her? Because he was already wanted, and so I lied about my age, and I lied about who I was, and then I lied about who my kids were, and it just went on and on and on. And when I moved back to my parents' house, I was so humiliated. First of all, they knew everything that had happened because my husband was still a fugitive at the time, and so it was an FBI issue and whatnot. And everybody knew my secret. And anyway, I did spend a couple of nights in jail. But I was so blessed because I have this really loving family. And my father bailed me out. And in fact, he sat at the jail overnight, two nights in a row, because one was a federal warrant, the next was a local warrant. I had to be arrested twice. And he sat there and waited for me, and he got me out. So as you can imagine, it was a disaster to try and clean up. And had I not had parents with resources, who knows what could have happened. So up to this point, I am feeling lonely. I'm feeling humiliated. I'm feeling desperate. I'm feeling so afraid because I turned myself in and he didn't. He was still a fugitive. And I didn't know what to do. Somehow I got a job. I started working for an electronics company, and my mom took care of my kids. And I had just turned 21, by the way, when I moved back in. Two kids, 21, had only had one experience in a bar before, and that was back in Utah when I had that wild little night out. And so it was on. I don't remember the first time that I was brought to a bar or her took me or anything, but it became my place. It was where I was able to just let go of everything. And, you know, I had so much wreckage to clean up, but I didn't know where to start. And although my dad took care of the attorney on the next 3 years that I had to go back and forth to Utah, he didn't help me fix the other stuff. I'm sure he finally said to himself, I'll do this, but the rest she can fix. And, you know, there's not a whole big drunkalogue for me. It was 10 years of, my employer would start breaking it out at 5 o'clock. We'd have cocktails at work. And although I never planned to have 10 or 20 or 30 or any of that, it always happened. I had a DUI in 1986. Once again, I was at my favorite bar, and you know, that favorite bar was only 8 miles from my house. And it was a weeknight of all nights, and it was, I think, almost 3 a.m. And I was pulled over, and I don't remember driving at all. I was in a blackout the whole way, but I was pulled over, and that's when I came to, and I thought, oh, shit, where am I, and what's happening? And it turned out I was 90 miles away from home. That entire time I was driving in a blackout. That was in 86, so I was 26 years old, sentenced to Alcoholics Anonymous and some classes. And it just was not possible that I was an alcoholic then. But you know, like I told you guys, I started drinking alcoholically the minute I had the first drink. I obsessed about it, and once I have it, I can't stop. There's just there's no predicting what's going to happen to me. I tried it over and over and over again, controlled drinking. And when I read in the book where it says switching from scotch to brandy, taking more physical exercise, reading inspirational books, I did all of that. I tried everything, and I never could control it. I wanted to. Anyway, in 86, getting that DUI, all I thought really was I just had bad luck that night, and the CHP didn't have anything better to do at 3:30 in the morning except to arrest me. But I went to those AA classes, and all I got out of it then, it was so funny, because I went at 6 a.m. I didn't want anybody to see me. I still continued with my job, even with a restricted license. But what I got out of those meetings was those people are so dumb. They read the same thing every meeting, and even after 6 months, even I knew what that stuff in the book said, because I could say it as somebody was reading it. So I definitely was not ready to surrender at that point in time. I continued, even while I was going to the classes, I continued drinking. And you know, I say I didn't drink every day, But I thought about drinking every day. It never went away. And I had to plan my drinking, so it was just this complete obsession that happened, because I would need to have make sure my mom was going to be home, because I didn't want to leave my kids alone, and there was a lot of planning that I had to do, and you know, almost every weekend I was shipping my kids off somewhere because I didn't want the responsibility, and I had more important things to do. I dragged those kids through just pure hell, chose really awful relationships. We had some stability because I lived with my parents for 7 years after I left that man. He was finally arrested, by the way, and it was in 83 that he was arrested and sentenced to life in prison. He had murdered a woman that he worked with. He was a drug addict and absolutely crazy man that I picked, and he was robbing her home one day, and he she came home while he was there, and he beat her to death. She was a 60-year-old gal, real fragile and everything, but you know, that there were so many things that that man did. I am lucky to be alive today, without a doubt. Anyway, got on that tangent again. See, Candy, I just get nervous. I chose more crazy relationships. After those 7 years at my parents' house, there was a guy at work, and he had been clean for 3 years from heroin. And he liked to drink, though, and so did I, and so we started this crazy relationship, and after my poor kids of having 7 years of stability, I said, guess what, we're moving out, I am finally getting an apartment of my own, thanks very much, Mom, I don't need you anymore, and, oh, by the way, kids, you're going to a different school. And the day we moved into that apartment with that guy, he OD'd. Had seizure in the bathroom, blood everywhere. I mean, my kids and I were both just like, oh, wow. Another bad choice. Although I still moved in with him, and we proceeded when he got released from jail, because the police came, that you know, we had screwdrivers the next day, and we were fine. That lasted for 6 months, and probably six more times I moved those kids. I moved in with another crazy person, and it just was insanity. I could not figure out why my life was like it was, because it was unmanageable from the very beginning. And, you know, during that time, I tried to do things like fix my kids' birth certificates and got my GED. Little tiny steps. I don't know how I was able to get through that. Maybe because I didn't drink Mondays and Tuesdays most of the time. But I don't know about you guys, but my hangovers last for days. 3 days. 3 days, and I feel like I have no mental capacity for anything. You know, I used to think that I gave my employer all I had. Which is such bullshit, because I could not function very well at all when I'm hungover. I can't think straight. I can't talk right. I can't make any good decisions. It really messes me up. So anyway, I'm miserable. And one more time, we moved. And my sister, I have a baby sister who had been sober for quite a few years. She lives in Arizona. And she came to visit. And it just so happened when she was visiting, what had happened, this wasn't unusual, by the way, it was a Friday night. I had started drinking at the office. And the next thing I knew, I came to. It was Saturday morning. I searched the house for my two little boys, who were 11 and 12, almost 12 and 13. Didn't know where they were. Didn't know if I had talked to them. Had no idea. But that happens to me when I drink. I'm a blackout drinker, and it hit me hard that time. I was so humiliated one more time. What a terrible parent I am. How negligent I had become, and how it kept happening over and over again. I ended up finding out they were at a friend's house, and they said they had talked to me, and, you know, they just looked at me like, wow. But my little sister, Angela, when she called to tell me she was coming to visit, she said, by the way, when I come to your house, I go to AA meetings, and I want you to go with me. I don't like going where I don't know anybody. And I thought, oh, that's fine. I'll support her. I'll do that. I had been to AA before. It was a bunch of old people that smoked cigarettes and read all that stuff. But it was good for her. So actually, she found the meeting, and we went there. And on the way, we were talking about my incident with the kids and coming home and blacking out. And at the meeting that night, when they were doing chips, she leaned over and she said, hey, it's been like 30 days for you. Do you want to take a 30-day chip? And I went, all right, I will. I'm just thinking, I want to fit in. So I did. And I was shocked after the meeting because all these people came up to me, and one guy had an index card, and he had written out, here's a good women's meeting, this one on Sunday night. You know, he was talking about all these meetings that he had written down, and I could tell he wasn't even flirting with me. He was just being nice. There was a couple women that came up after me. They gave me their phone numbers. And I just thought, wow, none of those meetings I went to before was like this. They were never that friendly. And something happened to me that night. Maybe I admitted to my innermost self that I'm an alcoholic. That meeting was a book study. And I started going to that book study. End of that drunk story is that became my home group. And I never drank after that night. It was crazy. So I think it was simply admitting to myself that I was an alcoholic. I don't know what I heard that night that made me think any different, but I know what I felt that night, and that night I felt like there might be some hope for me. When I took that 30-day chip, and when people said my name, they didn't call me Susan, because so many people do, and that's not my name, it's Suzanne, huh, Bill? They called me Suzanne, and they were so kind to me. I went to that meeting for 10 years. I'm really stubborn, and I did not read the book on my own. In fact, it was probably well over 6 months before I asked somebody to be my sponsor. It was because I was scared. I didn't know what the hell it meant, and I didn't want to ask anybody either. Everybody else here acts like they know what they're talking about. Oh, work the steps and call the sponsor and read the book. And I thought, why are people reading the Bible here? I don't want anything to do with that. But nobody's dead. It's the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. There's so many things that people just say, and we forget that new people don't know this stuff. I didn't know that stuff. I didn't know what the steps were. I didn't know why you needed a sponsor. So it took me a long time of sitting in meetings and figuring it out for myself, because I didn't ask for help until I was like 6 months sober. And that's why I think it's so wonderful when people like you will early on ask for help. Because I wouldn't. My pride was just in my way. I didn't want anybody to think I was stupid. For 2 years, I went to a meeting every day, at least a meeting every day. I went on my lunch hour, because I don't know about you guys, but at work is when I start getting all these emotional things get happening, and I get frustrated, and I get mad, and I don't know how to do all that stuff. And immediately, I would start thinking, I'm going to drink tonight. And I would go to a meeting instead. And when I would go home that night, I didn't go to the bar. I went to a meeting, and I didn't drink at night either. Because initially I thought people were lying. When they said 90 days, I thought, yeah, I can do days too, but not nights and weekends. I can't do that. But a day at a time, those days added up, and the meeting that was my home group, they gave chips there, and it just blew my mind how hopeful I got when other people were taking chips. And as I got to hear people sharing in that meeting, I felt like I wasn't the worst one in the group. That might sound crazy, but I thought nobody had ever done anything as awful as I had. And when I hear people like Debbie talking about her maternal issues, and I have maternal issues, and in Alcoholics Anonymous and working the steps, we can have some closure on those issues. And it made me feel like I'm not alone. It made me feel like I could belong. Where's Julia? When you said the other night, I keep coming here, these are my people. I had never felt like there was a place where these are my people. I would never speak to anybody. In fact, I hate speaking at work. I used to have to do presentations, and I absolutely hated it. Thought I needed medication to do it. But it was part of my job. And boy, I drank good after those presentations because it made me nervous. But I would do it for Alcoholics Anonymous. It has saved my life. And I know a lot of people in here that saved theirs too. When I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know what I felt like? Life's a bitch and then you die. And I don't need anybody's help. That's how I felt, truly. And I didn't have any friends. I didn't have any friends for a long time. One drinking buddy, and she didn't like drinking with me because I always argued and said, give me the keys, I'm fine to drive. And she probably got sick of arguing. But I look in the room today, and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, and a whole bunch of others. I'm just counting the women that I can call my friends. That is a miracle for me, that I feel as if I could pick up the phone any time of the day and say, I got an issue I need your help with. And I have never had that before. But through these 19 plus years, I've had that all along. And that has been just an amazing feeling for somebody like me who feels so alone in the world. I'm not alone anymore. I'm not so different anymore. And the other great thing is I found a way to deal with all of that stuff that I got here with. that humiliation, the shame, all the fear, all the resentment, all of those things that I got here with that I had no idea how to deal with. I found a way to deal with it. And it's the one thing I resisted, and it was working the steps. But I should have asked somebody for help, and I get frustrated today when I see a new person and they walk out the door with nobody grabbing them and saying, do you know what this is about? Do you have a book? Let me show you where the steps are, and here's my phone number. And I've watched over the years that it was like that for me back in the day. We did that all the time. And in fact, I forgot to tell you guys a story when I was 6 months sober. It was a group of guys at this Tuesday night meeting that I went to. And there was a guy, his name was Mead, and he had a panel. And I didn't know what a panel was, and I sure as hell wasn't going to ask him. And he said, hey, why don't you go with us? It was in Los Angeles, Skid Row. And I'm going, who's going? And he goes, oh, there's about six of us. You'll be okay. You'll come with us. We'll all drive together. Okay. Well, I'm liking my new social life with AA people and these guys who I feel very safe with. And that night, there was no other women going. It was me. But I felt safe with these guys. I did not know what it was. I thought it was probably just a little meeting down in L.A. And they take a little road trip to go there. So we get there, and it is at the Salvation Army. This is in a hardcore area. And I go in the place. And we sit down, there's six of us sitting in chairs, and we're looking like over the group like I am right now. And it is nothing but a group of black men. I'm looking, I'm like, I don't know, what am I don't have anything in common with these guys. I feel scared now, what am I doing here? And he looks over at me and he goes, you're going to speak first. Holy crap, what am I going to say up here? I can't tell these guys anything. And I did just what I'm doing tonight. I got up there, and you know, but then my knees were shaking really bad. And I just, you know, told my story and that I had 6 months sober. And after I shared and the meeting was over, a group of the guys came over and they became not so scary to me. They were just trying to get sober too. That was it. And they were saying, I could relate to this, and oh, I'm a blackout drinker too. And I was like, man, Alcoholics Anonymous is not particular who we are, where we come from. And it was just a moment of enlightenment for me that we alcoholics were everywhere. They also took me into a little detox center, and it was just a tiny little place, but on the wall when we walked in, there was a picture of a gal in a nurse uniform, and there was a police officer, a couple of different uniform type people where you could tell what they did for a living. Excuse me. And on the end of the wall, it said, your typical alcoholic. And that also helped me accept the fact that it didn't matter that I was 31, because I kept thinking, I am way too young. This is not possible. Old people get alcoholism. But it helped me realize it didn't matter. There was 10 years of my life I could hardly remember any of it because of my drinking. And that's not normal. Ten years I spent in Orange County. I'm a native Southern California gal, but now I'm a Clary County gal. And I picked a sponsor. She helped me work the steps. My little sister also helped me a lot on the steps. And I went and spent like a week at her house one time, and we just really went through the book. And we got to share a bunch of things. She shared her story with me. I shared my story with her. Things I had never really admitted to anybody about what had happened with my ex-husband. And it was just a feeling that made me feel like there was hope in my life. And I learned that when I would help somebody else work through the steps, it would help me go back to what I had done, and it helps me go back to the book, because I still, the only time I go back to the book, and I will admit this, some people are really good about reading it, I never have been, is when some other woman will ask me for help, and then I will go to the book. There's been a couple of times where I thought, I better check on that, and I've opened it without, but usually it's within working with somebody else that I will read the book. I moved to San Diego in 2000, and that was one of the hardest things that I dealt with along those years of sobriety. I did not realize that I had taken those people in those meetings for granted. I just thought, okay, well, I'll go to AA. I'll find another meeting. I know how to do this. Well, I found a meeting. It was by my house. I did not reach out my hand to anybody. I snuck in and I snuck out. I didn't feel like I belonged there. I didn't think they liked me. And you know how that goes. It was just my own insecurities and fear, and I was really surprised at how much I missed those people at that meeting. I thought, I'll still stay in touch and that kind of thing. But, you know, that's not reasonable when you're working full time and it's a long drive. It wasn't possible for me to get back to that meeting. In fact, I've only been back a few times since I moved away. But it really taught me a lesson when I did move. It taught me that I need to do the same thing now that I have done all along. So I, when they said, does anybody want to have the secretary position? I said, oh, okay, I'll do it. And lo and behold, I became the secretary of that meeting, and you know this, all of a sudden, I know a few people's names, they know mine, and I'm feeling again like I belong here in this AA meeting. So that was a difficult period in my sobriety. And then I moved here in 2005, and one more time, you would think I'd go, oh, I won't do the same thing I did the last time I moved, but I did. I went through a lot of stuff with work and a failed company, and I had never been unemployed except for, you know, way back when I lied about my age and all that kind of stuff. But since I had moved back, I had always worked. And I struggled one more time. Didn't feel like home. Didn't know anybody. Struggling to find a meeting where I felt like they were doing it that right way. Had been to a couple and was like, oh, I didn't like that. And nobody said hi to me. And, you know, all that craziness. It was hard, again. I had my car packed. I had my youngest son tell me I could move in with them. I was just going to pay the mortgage here, get a job down in Southern California, and work it all out that way. And he said, yeah, you can move in with me as long as you go back to school. Thank God that didn't work out. God had different plans, and I, this company had found me on the internet. I hadn't even sent them my resume, and I work for them today. But it's funny, a lot of people probably think that Bill and I met in Alcoholics Anonymous, and we didn't. Because at the time, I wasn't going to hardly any meetings. But I was searching for a husband on the internet. Well, that'll fix me. As I've told you guys, I was single since 1981. You know, I raised my kids. Now they're grown. They're 32 and 33. And I was ready to really see what it's like to date sober. And, you know, it had been a long time. I knew that there was a lot of work God had to do with me and my relationship stuff. And so I didn't date for a long time. But when I moved here, I did. And I met Bill. He lived 6 blocks away from me. It was just ridiculous that we couldn't meet in Winco or something like that. But I do have to say, when we started dating, he was going to a lot of meetings, and I didn't want our AA to be together. But I did go to more meetings when I started dating him, and you know, it helped me connect in the community and feel like I could be okay going to meetings again here. So I'm so grateful that that happened. Not to mention, I get a wonderful husband. What I was able to do, working the steps with my family, you know, I resented the hell out of my parents. These wonderful people who have done nothing but love me for my whole life. I resented them because, you know, damn it, they should have known that I was lying to them for 2 years and saved me from that crazy man. I was able to see that it was just my bad choices. I would never have been able to find out those really important points so that I could look at things in a different way. And I have a wonderful relationship with them today. My two sons, that was tough. It was really tough. I still have my oldest son who, it's obvious, he has a lot of resentment. He never went to see his dad. My youngest son did. He developed a relationship with him. That's what he wanted to do. And making my amends to those boys, it was hard. It was hard admitting the things that I had done and knowing that they were fully aware of how many things I had done to hurt them. But the beautiful thing was, after a few years, I think they believed, not by what I said, but what I did, that I wasn't going to drink anymore. I couldn't tell them that. I couldn't swear it to them because I had said it many, many times. You know, on the weekends where my son Joe would look at me and he would say, "You should see yourself." And it just got me in the heart. That was when I was, you know, drinking with the heroin addict. But those kinds of things didn't stop me from drinking. But when I made my amends to them, I was able to live like what I wanted to be as their mom. I have great relationships with most of my sisters today. My brothers, I didn't do them any harm when I was drinking, and I was gone for most of the time. But it definitely changed all of my relationships by working the steps. One thing that I didn't think was possible was putting myself on the amends list and being able to forgive myself. Because I think I resented me more than anybody else. The years of watching the destruction and not being able to stop it, yet seeing it happen over and over again. I didn't think it was possible that I would be able to feel like I have something to give back to anybody. And today, somehow it happened that days and years have gone by, and rarely do I even have a thought about drinking. The obsession was gone probably after the first year, really. When I got scared, I would want to drink. And after working the steps and feeling like I could even be around it and not be tempted by it, the fear just went away. So I am so grateful to Alcoholics Anonymous for a whole list of things, a room full of friends, women that I can call friends today. I didn't think it was possible that I could have that. Men that I could call friends today. And a family that loves me and a family that I don't resent. It has been really a wonderful ride. Lots of different ups and downs, but you know, no matter what, I never stopped knowing that I was an alcoholic. I never stopped believing that I was one. And I have always loved Alcoholics Anonymous. I get hope here, no matter how many meetings I've been to. And I'm so happy that my home group, the women's meeting on Tuesday night, does CHIPS, because it gives me that renewed sense of hope. It reminds me of how thrilled I was getting a 90-day CHIP, that it was possible to go that many days without a drink for me. And I love seeing that it still works. Nothing has changed about Alcoholics Anonymous. It still works. Thank you so much for asking me to come and share my story. And thank you guys, all of you, for listening. And have a great rest of the weekend.